coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK.
Worth doing badly.
Hello and welcome from me, Jamie Krieger, David Weber, and Ethan Stoppenhagen to today's episode of Worth Doing Badly. And today we will be looking at the lessons for the 11th Sunday after Pentecost according to the 3 years Series C lectionary. And the readings are Isaiah 66 verses 18 to 23, Psalm 50 verses 1 to 15, Hebrews 12 verses 4 to 29, and Luke 13 verses 22 to 30. And we begin with David Weber.
The 11th Sunday, we are faced with what I think is probably the fiercest conflict within Lutheran theology, is that it is very clear that Jesus taught that his salvation is a free gift. But in this text, he commands us to strive to enter salvation's narrow door. Got any thoughts on that, Ethan, being fresh out of seminary?
Well, it's funny because I've just been preaching about how Jesus frees you from your striving. And now here Jesus is this week saying strive. And I think what we end up with is there's two different kinds of striving. You have the striving after wind of Ecclesiastes that we heard a couple weeks ago. And that's sort of a useless striving after something that's just going to disappear in a minute or in a year or in a decade. Whereas the striving Jesus has here is the verb agonizomai, right? And that's where we get agonize, but it's about it comes from the athletic context and the striving of a contest to win a prize.
Yeah.
And so instead of striving after nothingness, you're striving towards the goal, striving. And that's how we see that then in all our readings, especially the Hebrews reading. Yeah. I think that's the distinction there you have between the two strivings. Now, how that plays in with salvation is the striving that Jesus gives us, is that supposed to be part of salvation? I think we could talk about that and figure that out.
So I like the idea of the agonistic, the agon, the contest, the agonistic struggle. It's a different kind of struggle. And what I like is the context here. Jesus dismissed as a distraction an abstract question about who is saved and how many are saved. It was unimportant to him. I mean, he dismissed it summarily as a distraction from what really matters. And what really matters happens within the single individual. And that the single individual strives to enter into the narrow door. That there's a way of thinking about or talking about salvation which is meaningless. And there's a way of talking about it in which it actually engages the experience of Christ's salvation. And that experience is summed up in this agonistic struggle. So salvation, let's just assume we can agree, salvation is a gracious gift. Nothing more to add to that. And yet, Jesus' command to strive says something about what it means to be the recipient of that gift. And so we can say for sure, salvation is not an anesthetic that puts us to sleep and makes us passive. It's an energy that increases our desire for evermore life, finally only being satisfied by eternal life. So I think when we recognize that salvation is promised to us as satisfying our desire for the fullness of life, that will ignite a striving desire in us that is, as Jesus says, is going to be expressed in our asking. We're going to be filled with questions. That salvation will fill us with seeking, faith-seeking understanding. And there will be a knocking on doors that seem to frustrate our life, our movement towards the fullness of life. So whatever else salvation is, it is a form of energy that is that we, the believer, is are living. So the word, as you said, the word for striving describes the athlete's effort, but also Hebrews says it's the athlete's joyful participation in the competition. There is within the pain of the athletic event, that pain is also an expression of joy to complete the course as excellently as possible. That so you would never ever say to the athlete, stop striving. The athlete embodies how beautiful striving can be. So this Luke passage essentially says you would never say to the person who has salvation, stop striving any more than you would say that to the athlete. And then when we finally do get to Hebrews, we will get several more images of striving in which it would be nonsense to say a person who is that should not strive. So striving, given what we're saying about salvation, has to be free. And in fact, Jesus makes it clear that it would make us shudder. The nightmare of being without salvation, that nightmare of being locked out, would make us shudder that we had been barred from the fullness of life. That shuddering can only be done by someone who is already saved, someone who already loves the gift of grace, that there is this constant thought of what would it be like to be without this possibility, this potentiality in my life. And so the nightmare of being locked out is very real to those who are not locked out. And it's a very real nightmare because while salvation is finished, while the story of salvation is complete, we still live in time, and time is moving. And that's why Jesus earlier told us not to be anxious, that we do live in time, and the movement of time makes us anxious. But anxiety is not something which is part of the whole Christian life. It's rather to be energetic, to be asking and seeking and knocking on this door. And the striving is what clearly happens and freely happens once we recognize and appreciate that Christ has put the end to the nightmare of us being locked out. Striving is a form of gratitude. It's a sacrifice of thanksgiving. It's how you naturally react to this gift when you think about your life without the gift. To be locked out of Christ's salvation means to suffer a life that is dominated by the sorrow of weeping and the anger of gnashing teeth. You don't have to look very far in our world today to see how sorrow and anger are dominating so much of life. And Christ's gift of salvation promises to deal with that. So finally, Jesus commanded us to strive because it energizes us to be active participants in his salvation. Now, and this salvation, as Mary envisioned, is going to turn and is continually turning the world order on its head, so that this salvation is real. It's truly a gift, but it's now at work in time, in the world, in us, humbling the proud and lifting up the humble. And if that doesn't reflect a kind of striving and agonistic struggle, then nothing does.
So we're not striving for salvation, but striving to preserve it.
Those who are locked out are quite content with it. There's no fear. Those who aren't locked out are the ones who would fear.
Right. It's an effort to preserve the gift instead of just having this thing, where we're energized to hold on to it and to cling to it so that it doesn't run through our hands.
And it's actually to recognize and appreciate that this is a gift worth absolutely keeping. The recognition that this is really a gift, and to be without this gift is terrifying, is a part of this striving. And, you know, I'll be more than happy in a couple of weeks if someone says that it's completely wrong, but, both have to be true. Salvation has to be a gift, and the result of that gift has to be this desire to be part of the agon, the struggle, the athletic event, which is the life of faith. Maybe the psalm will help us. Because the psalm turns the attention a little bit to those who would not strive, but give sacrifice. And in the psalm, God says, do you think I really need, I'm the creator of the world, do you think I need these sacrifices? I don't need them. The sacrifice isn't for me. It's for you. So the striving, we might say, is the same thing. That striving isn't so that we gain salvation. It's not something that God needs from us, that he needs our cooperation to give us this gift. It's for us. It's for as I keep repeating, this striving is how we come in time to recognize and to appreciate that what it means to actually have this gift as the defining feature of our lives. So, the psalm, in a sense, does command sacrifice, but the moment God commands it, he says it's not demanded. Because the creator doesn't need what any creature can give to him. He doesn't need the animal sacrifice to somehow satisfy his hunger. It's demanded because the person making the sacrifice needs to come to this recognition and appreciation. We are creatures who are, notorious for not paying attention to reality. And this is one of the ways that we have our interface with reality about what it means to have this gift of salvation. So sacrifice was commended to generate in the human heart a sense of thanksgiving, and to have that thanksgiving not as obligatory, but as a free expression that's finally reaches its peak in vowing one's life to God. That is the sacrifice that God looks forward to, the person who in love for God does what every person who in love does. They make a vow, a commitment. They connect themselves with the beloved. So Christ did not command our striving because he wanted our help in salvation. He didn't need our help. It's rather that he wanted to energize our asking and seeking and knocking on this narrow door so that we better understand what it is that Christ gives us in satisfying our desires, not only for eternal life, but as the text, the gospel says, that we have this desire that what Christ does actually turns this world upside down and on its head, so that those who think they're first actually discover they're last. And that discovery is a good thing. That is what puts them in the position to enjoy the gift that God gives. And those who are humbled and last, by God's grace, discover themselves to be first. So the psalm is talking about how this is an aspect of salvation. Striving doesn't win salvation. It is a way that we experience and enjoy it. Now, Isaiah slightly changes the focus. And as you said, Ethan, we're looking for this thread sometimes it's obvious, sometimes it's not even there. And sometimes it takes some work, but in Isaiah, we get an idea about what it means to live in time. As the gospel made clear, we still can have fear in this world about salvation. We who have entered this narrow door, still live in time. And as the writer of Hebrews will say this, that because we live in time, yes, salvation is finished, but we aren't. And it's possible to take lightly salvation and not treat it with the gravity and grace that grace deserves. All right. So here in Isaiah, Isaiah makes it clear the time is coming, and that's what it means to live in the reality of salvation, is that not everything is been revealed. Salvation is fully real. It does not need us, but it's not fully revealed. And it's not fully real to each of us as individuals, because that's why we progress through time. This is why we meet weekly. Yes, we meet weekly knowing and proclaiming this fully real salvation. But the revelation of that salvation is an ongoing thing. And, I don't know how many times I would make visits and the person would assure me, I have not forgotten the gospel, but when I do, I'll come back to church. That's not the function of church, of to remember some artifact. It is to energize us and to this ongoing revelation of what salvation actually means in the world and in our lives. So, we have claimed that Jesus's command here to strive to enter salvation's narrow door is compatible with salvation as a gift. And so we just remind ourselves, human striving adds nothing to the reality of salvation. But what it does is it reveals to us over time the fullness of salvation that, if we can't look back on how time has revealed the beauty of this gift, something is deeply missing. If the progress of time has not also made progress in our understanding of salvation, something has gone wrong. And so Isaiah reveals that progressing in the recognition and appreciation of salvation means that we come to increasingly pay attention to the signs of salvation that God sets in our lives. If we've already arrived, you don't need signs. If you're going to Washington, D.C., and you're already there, you don't need a sign telling you where it is and how far away it is. So one of the things this striving is that we still live in the era of signs, because there's a lot of confusing things about what salvation is and isn't. That's why Jesus was dismissive of people's interest in how many people would be saved. And to get on with the really important aspect of what does salvation mean to me, who is in working through time and moving towards the fulfillment of Christ's promises. So the two signs that Isaiah mentions are that, and this is amazing, the two signs that salvation is real and finished are that there are souls in, quote, distant coastlands who desire God, even though they do not know God and have not seen his glory. That's amazing. That, you know, I think sometimes in the church we wring our hands about, you know, how small our numbers are getting. And Isaiah says that is probably not all that important. That's probably the wrong kind of striving. It's rather than we already know in advance that if there is this real salvation, there are those in distant coastlands that are desiring it. They don't know certain things. They don't know who God is. They don't know God's glory, but there is a deep desire for this salvation. And the second sign is that there are those, quote, among the nations who have finally seen God's glory. This is Robert Alter, the great Jewish scholar. He says, here's the second sign. Let me repeat it. There are those among the nations who have enjoyed God's glory and desire to be sent out. So the second sign is also a desire. The first sign is that there are those who desire God. There are those who have seen God's glory who desire to carry this message to the distant coastland. Those are the two signs by which we understand that salvation is real. The good news is that with this good news to be proclaimed is finally said by Isaiah, it is that one month gives way to the next month. And one Sabbath gives way to the next Sabbath. And the movement of time does not end in death. The movement of time is gaining energy and moving towards a consummation where the fullness of God's salvation is fully revealed to humanity. And until our recognition and appreciation of God's salvation has been consummated, we continue to strive energetically to know and understand and to speak this salvation more fully. That, so Isaiah gives us a nicely rounded view of what this energy of striving is to those who have already seen the glory of God. So now we get to Hebrews, and the connecting thread goes through the word resist. So Hebrews changes the accent of both Isaiah and the psalm and says the striving to enter the narrow door means resistance to sin. And resistance isn't presented here as an onerous demand that we don't desire. It's rather an energetic alternative to modern defeatism. And this might be unfair, but I just feel like we're surrounded by defeatist unbelief that resistance to sin is futile. There's nothing you can do about it. Just go along with it. It's in your upbringing. It's in your genes. There's nothing, and there's nothing more depressing to me than to think that our struggle with sin is futile, and it doesn't, and we don't need to resist it. And I think even the more insidious defeat is the people who will say resistance to sin is unnecessary. It's not important. Salvation is a free gift, and you don't have to worry about any kind of striving response, which just ignores what the gospel says. This would be as ridiculous as I said earlier, an athlete refusing training because, you know, you just don't need to work very hard if you're an athlete. That's nonsense. The definition of an athlete means that you are in the, you're in an agonistic training because you're getting ready for the agon, for the event. It would be, it's this kind of passivity, this defeatism, I think, is as ridiculous as a father who refuses to discipline his children, saying, you know, they need to be free. They'll turn out all right. Never has that ever happened. I like one of the other images. It would be like a pilgrim getting ready to go on a pilgrimage, but getting ready does not mean getting physically ready. Getting strengthening the hands and the legs. That would be ridiculous to think that you could enter the rigors of pilgrimage and never strive to be ready for that. And the last image, it would be as silly to think that there is no striving in the Christian life. It would be as silly as imagining the Exodus from Egypt being successful without the giving of the Torah and obedience to the Torah. You know, and there, the writer of Hebrews is very clear. It was a terrifying experience to receive the Torah, and it was an agonistic experience to live by that Torah and making, as Israel made their way from Egypt to the promised land. If he would have said to them in the Exodus, relax, don't worry, don't strive, there wouldn't have been an Exodus. And so by the very nature of these positions in life or positions in the world, striving is simply what follows rationally and logically. So we're sinners. We don't stop being sinners because we have salvation. And because we have this designation, we must strive against this. We are sinners and we're not happy with it. No, we are sinners who want to be free of the life damaging sin. To be a sinner who is saved means to strive. There's no other way around it. So it would be nonsense to say, to admit to being a sinner, but then to say, right, I'm not going to put much effort into living in an alternative way because I have the gift of salvation. And that gift means I don't have to do anything. which is true. But the sinner who has this salvation does wish to do something, to be not a sinner, to be free of sin, to strive against it. So the idea of effort, that the Christian life is not somehow one of passionate effort, is nonsense on stilts. And the trick is, the key is, that effort so oftentimes does become onerous obligation. It does at times feel like we are being punished. It does, in fact, seem like this is something which is inconsistent with salvation. That's what the writer of Hebrews is making clear. But there's a difference between what seems to be the case and what is the case. It's at moments like that in which we remind ourselves that Christ has already fully plotted salvation's path. Yes, we're still on a path. Yes, we're still moving. And that path in the fullness of time will reveal that our struggles have been part of the salvation. But when we're stuck in it, we need to be reminded that the path is fully plotted, and that the plot to the story of salvation is fully finished. That's what Jesus declared on the cross. What isn't fully finished is our movement on the path. But these facts of our salvation don't magically relieve us of the truth that we all live in the present. And the present is a tough place to live. It's not fixed like the past. It's not certain like the future. It is the present is where so many confusing things descend upon us. And so in the present, we are given this assurance that when we're striving, something hasn't gone wrong. Something doesn't need to be fixed. Striving is all part of what it means to have this very real salvation continually revealed to us. That's what's taking place in the present as we resist and struggle and endure and take care. The Greeks gave us a lovely word for this. We have real potentiality. We are sinners, yes, but that does not describe our potentiality. It would be depressing to say that we are sinners and that is all that there is to be said about it. No, we have this desire to be different. And that potentiality is being existentially realized moment by moment. That's why there is the movement of time. That's why month gives way to month and Sabbath gives way to Sabbath, because that is how God reveals the beauty of this gift of salvation. So the path and story of salvation are finished. There's no arguing about that. And that path and that story are continually giving our lives eternal potentiality. And in a world that lives in despair, that there is nothing beyond death, the gift of potentiality is life-changing. It turns the world on its head. And so our asking and seeking and knocking is the energy inside of us wanting God to evermore reveal himself to us and his salvation. And that's what striving through to enter the narrow door expresses our desire to evermore have the salvation revealed to us.
Thank you, David, and thank you for listening. All the podcasts from this series, Worth Doing Badly, are available from our website, lutheranradio.co.uk. Try our app, go to the App Store or Google Play, and get the one that is right for you for free. If you have any questions or comments about our program or any other programs on our schedule, write me an email to manager@lutheranradio.co.uk. David and I will be back next week at this same time. Stay on for more here on Lutheran Radio UK.